Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free. There'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast. I'm here joined by the Brains team, the Bames Trust of Celtic Underground. Hail, hail history, Matthew and Andrew. How you doing, guys?
Good, yourself?
Good, Brian.
I'm excellent, and I'm even happier because we're doing this podcast following a 3-1 going on 33-1 victory over Aberdeen. I'll ask you what I thought about it in a minute. I do find it funny that the people who'd already decided that Nancy wasn't up to scratch, and I'm not saying whether I do it or I don't, but there's people who are really dead set against him. Their default, when you praise the performance, was, it was only playing Aberdeen. You could say that about any team in the Premier League, actually. And actually, Aberdeen, I was surprised. I thought, after the game, I thought, oh, Jimmy Tilling's rubbish. How come he's still there at Aberdeen? And then I looked at the table, and they were actually the form team going into that game in Scottish football. And they were, I think, fourth or fifth in the table.
What, I think one defeat in 11 or something like that. They'd won 7 and drawn 3 in the previous 11 games.
So it wasn't my perception of what Aberdeen were going into the game.
No, they were the form team in the country.
And because ironically, we went into that game, I was thinking, well, if you can't beat Aberdeen, that's it. They're rubbish. So anyway, Matthew, what did you think going into the game? What were your thoughts going into the game with them?
Going into the game? Yeah. Different from coming out. I don't think there was any doubts on it. I think if we'd lost on Sunday, he was sacked. I personally believe that. I'm not saying that's intrinsically the right or wrong thing. I just think that if we had lost 5 on the bounce, given the general anger, I felt the biggest problem on Sunday's game wasn't anger. It was apathy. I think apathy tends to be a bigger killer often than anger can. I felt that going into the ground, I had a spare ticket, could not for the life of me give it away. Didn't want any money for it. Offered it several people. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted this ticket. And I bumped into a few people outside the ground that I know, and they were very much, well, we're here type thing. But there wasn't the sense of anger. They weren't outraged. They just went, oh, this just feels like it's going to be a bit of a slog this season. But I think universally they were all of the view. I mean, clearly some people wanted him sacked after we lost the cup final. Those were significantly increased after losing at Tannadice. So I genuinely think if we'd lost on Sunday, I actually don't think he'd have got out of the ground without being sacked. I actually think it wouldn't have even been a few days later. I think they'd have made a decision personally that day to get rid of him. Now, that hasn't happened, and it slightly leaves you in a sense of limbo. I want him to do well. Of course I do. It never fails to amaze me, Celtic supporters who were sort of going, I hope he gets beat. We just need, but I mean, I just sort of think, it's fair enough as a Celtic supporter to say, we do need to get rid of him now. It's fair enough to say we need to make a change. But to be a Celtic fan and be going into a game saying, I hope we get beat today because I'm just angry, is just to me utterly insane. And I did meet people, and I did speak to people online, but also in real life that were of the view, oh, yeah, I sort of just hope that we lose today and that's it all done with. That's crazy to me. We are slightly, as I say, in a sort of a limbo sense just now in terms of how much do you back him in January. But the simple reality is he's off and running. Hopefully it's not a false start. Hopefully it's something that we're actually going to build on. From my perspective, it was before the game, it was a bit, just general apathy as much as anything else. I hope now, though, that there's going to be some sense of direction.
Andrew, just to touch on something Matthew said there, I put on the piece online about what have you got to lose backing the manager?
Yeah.
If you back him and he wins, brilliant.
And I liked it.
and he loses, what have you lost? I mean, that's what a football fan did. And I tweeted it, and a guy said, because we want him to lose because that will speed up him getting the sack. And two things went through my mind at that. It was one, wow, imagine having that type of certainty in life. That you, that after four games, you'd know for certain he is absolutely, definitely the wrong guy, right? And then, like you, Matthew, I thought, that's not being a football, that's not supporting your club. And so I went onto Google Maps. I put in Ibrox Stadium, Edmundston Drive, and I gave him the link, and I said, next round of fixtures, you might find yourself more at home at this place. And he got very annoyed, which prompted me to look at his timeline. And I'm chuffed to bits that I pissed him off because he's patently a reform voter based on the rest of his timeline. Just shows you all
result.
We're a result to all, even reform voters.
I have to say, I'm not going to lie, Brian, but I suspect the biggest shock that's going to be in this, that rather than Andrew making an anti-reform comment, that it came from you. I think that's going to stun, you know, many listeners.
Goodness, no. I genuinely am looking out visa possibilities for Canada if Nigel Farage became Prime Minister. I really would. I'd leave the country. Andrew, your thoughts going into the game?
Just, I was bricking it, effectively, because, like Matthew says, I felt if he lost, even though I'm desperately trying to be supportive, it's almost like the final kind of crutch kicked away. If you lose five games in the first time since it was 53 or something, wasn't it? It was, I think, the last time Celtic lost five consecutive games. It's really weird when it got to that four games and you thought, my God, there's still these new things. I'm a 58-year-old Celtic supporter. I'm still seeing things that I'd never seen before. Although I probably did see quite a few of those, but I don't remember it. 78, because that was my first season going to the games regularly. But it's astonishing you think that Celtic had never lost four games, and that's how bad it was for him. But it almost felt, he felt bedevilled. And I felt it, as soon as Aberdeen drew level the other day, he thought, it's not supposed to happen for this guy. It's just not supposed to happen. There are just certain kind of predetermined or preordained elements in life that certain people are fated. So the very fact that that turned around and they got the two goals and run out pretty comfortable winners as it was, I'm hoping. I mean, it was funny. His comment was funny after the game when he said, I don't believe in luck, but I haven't had any luck. Did you see that in his post-match? And that's the way you felt. You think, my God, this guy is like somebody up there doesn't like him. Somebody up there doesn't like him. Just to see the wee relief in his face. These are human things. I always wrap my Celtic sport around my humanity. And I haven't seen much evidence of it in so many quarters in the last week. It's no the Celtic I knew. There was a guy on the radio Sunday night as well on Radio Scotland, you know, on their phone-in. And he said romantically, he said, I've got this romantic idea about what Celtic is and what we represent as a support. And he said, and I thought to myself, nah, Celtic supporters, they wouldn't do that to a guy who's just in the door, regardless how bad things went. And he said, you know, it butts up against the reality. We're no different. Celtic support are no different from any other support. Football supporters are no longer, should be classified as such, because they don't really support. They celebrate. They celebrate when they're football celebrators. They celebrate when things go well, and when things go badly, they turn on whoever they see is responsible for things going badly.
I don't think that's a new phenomenon. I think that's always been the nature. I think the only difference we have nowadays, and we've spoken about this issue before, is the issue of social media. I think that, you know, the reality is, people, there's always for every team, there's different groups of fans. So whether it's Celtic or Albion Rovers, and clearly there's a big difference in what I'm going to say here, but, you know, clearly a lot of Celtic supporters would go to see Celtic regardless, win, lose or draw, you know, as the song says. A lot of Celtic supporters won't, you know, that's just the reality. A lot of Celtic supporters wouldn't go as often if the club, you know, was going through a bad spell. I think that's just, you can see that it's not even a bad spell as much. I think it's, you know, you can even see, you know, during the Ronnie Dailey years, that weirdly, you know, some Celtic supporters have told themselves now that this was almost the equivalent of the 90s, you know, where we just had to make do with winning the league every year and throwing in a cup. Oh, it was a dreadful time. But you only have to see that, you know, the days when we're still closing the top tier for certain, you know, cup games and all the rest of it. The reality is there's always a portion of fans who, you know, who do want to celebrate and all the rest of it. And that's, at the end of the day, it's people's free time, it's people's money. They've every right to do what they want.
Yeah. But I mean, but has changed, but, you know, me and St. Anthony spoke on here about it. Like, and it's a vivid memory of 19, I think it was 81, Celtic, like, they absolutely, like, screwed up in the league. They should have won that title out of the park. Then they lost, I think that was the year they lost, was it 5-0? It might have been 1980. They lost 5-1 up at, they were home and hosed almost in the title. They lost all these games towards the end of the season. But the last game was against St. Mirren at Love Street. And it ended up 1-1. And I'll never forget it. There was people crying. They'd lost the league. They were crying. But there was this chant around, "We want Celtic. We want Celtic." And they stayed half an hour after the game. "We want Celtic." And the players eventually sheepishly come out, says, "God, we don't deserve this, but thanks." That wouldn't happen now. That wouldn't happen now. You wouldn't get enough people that would say, "We've just fucked up a league and we still love our club."
Yeah, but how many people was that, Andrew? How many people was that?
I don't think you would even get, you wouldn't get any, maybe 5,000 or something, but you wouldn't even get 5,000 doing it now.
But part of it, I think, is the nature of things, in that everybody's bought a season book.
It's no Celtic. I'm not saying this is a Celtic thing. I'm saying this is a societal, football thing.
There's a number of aspects to it. In terms of with football, well, part of it is, back in the 80s, well, early 80s, you know, again, you and I will go on about what the average attendances were, you know, 16 and 14 and 15 at Celtic Park, average attendance. Whereas now you get 50,000 people who bought into a season book and have committed to paying that money through the season. So whereas 40 years ago, when the people get pissed off, getting back to Matthew's apathy bit, when people get pissed off to apathy, they left. And they just didn't turn up at the games. And the angry people were so angry that they couldn't even get out of the house to go to the game. Whereas now, these people have committed. It's in their diary, and they've committed to going to spending that money on the games. Well, I've paid, and I'm angry, so I'm going to turn up and vent my anger. I do think there's part of that, because they've already paid for it. I think the nature of the away ticket system,
well, that's
it. Your point about Smirnin, the away ticket system then means you've got the same people going every single week. So again, they've almost sort of committed to it because, well, I'm not going to, you know, pull rules and all that for the going to away games. I'm not going to chuck that.
But no, I can still see me. But I don't know if you
so
two are there.
I'm going to vent my anger about the fact that it's almost like you've made me come and watch this shite sort of after because I've already paid for it and I can't get out of it. So I do think
I don't understand
that as well.
Yeah.
As modern society has changed in lots of ways.
I think
social media changes things to an instant decision on everything and stuff.
Yeah, the whole season book holding. But the other thing that always amuses me, or bemuses me, I should say, maybe more. Like we seem to have lost Matthew. Did you notice that?
Yeah,
was
it
just
going.
Me that's
I'm
lost
sure
Matthew?
You'll get back in.
Right. The other thing that bemuses me is, like, people say, "I've paid all this money, therefore you have to deliver this for me. You pay your money to go to what Celtic." Nobody says it's a good Celtic or a bad Celtic or an indifferent Celtic. It's like, you know, I wrote to Marvel, Brian, because I wasn't happy the direction Kevin Feig has been taking Marvel in the last 2 years. I wrote to Marvel. They never even get back to me. It's like, all they're saying to me, "If you don't like the Marvel films now, don't go to watch them." When I go to watch them, I've got no guarantees from Marvel that they're going to be of a certain quality. It's up to me whether I spend my money or not, regardless of whether the Marvel films are any good anymore or they're pish. It's like, because I've spent all this money buying Marvel product, it doesn't give me this divine right to get something out of that product. It doesn't make any sense to me, because there's so many irrationalities in football that I'm surprised I'm so enveloped in it, because it just doesn't make any sense. It's a world that doesn't make any sense to me.
What about you, Matthew? Does it make sense to you?
Well, we actually cut out there for quite a while, so I'm just trying to currently catch up with what the discussion was. Okay, I go back to what I said, though. I mean, I think in general terms, I suspect what Andrew, you know, was getting at, because as I say, I cut out briefly there. I suspect that, you know, is there an expectational thing? I think there is an aspect. Again, this is a societal thing. You're right. People do expect a certain quality from Marvel. People do expect a certain quality. You know, it's one of the reasons it's so expensive to go to concerts now, is that if people go and see Taylor Swift, etc., they genuinely expect this utterly phenomenal, memorable moment. And I suspect, particularly at the bigger clubs, of which clearly Celtic would be, you know, in Scotland, there will be a certain expectational level. Celtic, I think the one thing that slightly causes Celtic issues, which isn't intrinsically anyone's fault, but is one of these things that, you know, your life is governed by your experiences up to a point. And if you have different experiences over a number of years, then your expectations and will subsequently change. Celtic have had this century, and certainly since, you know, like 2012, Celtic have had utterly unprecedented dominance. You know, there's never, even Jock Stein never came close. Even in, I think, the first nine in a row spell, it just wasn't as dominant, you know. And I think that inevitably feeds certain expectations. And it's not even so much expectations. It's more about that. It's not so much I expect something. It's more simply that this is what happens. And so if you don't like change and something's different, then you're going to be unhappy. So we've got this strange thing from a Celtic perspective, because we've been so successful, that has to come back at you. I mean, I think a huge part of the reason for the protest this season, which, bear in mind, you know, in many cases predated the Kairat game, etc., a lot of this initial anger comes before that. So sometimes I think people who are not Celtic supporters will look at the club and go, how can they do that? You know, they won a double last season, they're favourites for the treble this season, and yet there's already fans protesting, sack the board, and bringing up, I mean, albeit that it became much worse after the Kairat game. And I think it's simply that reflection of, there's a weird thing. We are currently victims of our own success. So we've won 13 out of the last 14 titles, and the majority of trophies, like our cups, in that era. Now, the weird thing is, if in that time, let's say Rangers had never gone out of business in 2012, and let's say in, since 2012, let's say instead of winning 13 out of 14 titles, let's say we'd won 8. Give Rangers 4 and put 2 somewhere else, Pittodrie, Tynecastle, or whatever the case may be. And again, let's give us less cups overall, but still, you know, the majority. The weird thing is, we'd have been less successful in that era, but we'd probably be happier just now. Because we would say, oh, well, look, there wouldn't be, at the start of the season, it wouldn't be an anger that we hadn't signed. Because we would sort of say, well, look, in the last 14 years, we've won 8 titles. We're well ahead of every other club in the country. You know, Rangers are the closest, and they've only got 4. You know, Hearts and Aberdeen have won 1. Oh, no, we won a double last season. God, that's great. We've not won a double for 3 or 4 years. And I think there's that weird thing where it's simply that your expectations get raised and your assumptions get raised. And then it becomes, I suppose, a little bit like a drug is probably the best way to do it. You know, if somebody takes, you know, a certain amount of heroin, if they keep taking that exact amount, it will eventually wear off. And so they have to go, they have to increase the amount that they're actually taking. And it's, I think, similar with Celtic's strategy and success. If we've been so dominant as we have domestically, it's not enough to just say, well, forever you keep getting that same dosage. People want to see it increased. And the only way you can increase it, if you've been so dominant domestically, the only way you can increase it is by seeing some sort of progress, not simply in Europe, but perhaps seeing some sort of general excitement off the pitch. You know, if we'd started, not this season, but last season, with the board saying, we're expanding the main stand. Now, I'm not getting into the rights or wrongs of that, but if we had done that, and, you know, we'd maybe gone a little bit, maybe say we'd beat Bayern or something like that, I don't think you'd have seen the protests, but I think where people react is they sort of go, right, okay, it's genuinely not boredom. Fans of other clubs will say it's boredom. It's not boredom. That's the wrong way to look at it. But it is definitely that at some point, you need to change this. You need to change your experience. You need to increase the dosage, as it were. And I think that's where a lot of the protests come, and it's where a lot of the fan anger comes from. Even when to the rest of the footballing world, certainly in Scotland, it just looks insane that we are complaining about anything.
No, I mean, in fairness, and other people recognise that, you just want the club to be all you think it can be. That's what Harry Brady's been going on about for years in this site. So, like, and it isn't all it can be. We all recognise that, and that's why we're part of the collective and such like, because you think there is another way. There is another way. let's see it. It might not be a successful away, but we'll never know until we see the other way.
What you were saying there, Matthew, and I always keep this in my phone, it's a quote from Adam Smith. And it is,
That's more like it.
A linen shirt is, strictly speaking, not a necessity of life. The Greeks and Romans lived, I suppose, very comfortably, though they had no linen. But in the present times, through the greater part of Europe, a creditable day labourer would be ashamed to appear in public without a linen shirt, the want of which would be supposed to denote that graceful degree of poverty which, it is presumed, nobody can fall into without extreme bad conduct. I.e., once your threshold gets to there, that becomes the base. And you're always expecting...
It's like Matthew says, you need to keep increasing the dosage. Somebody told me that at Manjaro tonight. Like, I didn't realise you need to keep... That's why it costs you so much money. Because you can't just get a couple injections or whatever a month. Once you're on Manjaro, then you need to get more injections because it doesn't work quite as well. We're a Manjaro club now.
But it is that thing. And then I think it's also... I think it's a number of things. I think it is... That's become our base, is we win everything. That's then become the base.
Yeah.
And people are looking for what's better than winning everything. And then they look and they say, we've got £80 million. And a legitimate criticism would be, you would expect a business that's got that to say, this is our plan going forward. Mm. And one of the criticisms is, we don't have that. We just have this mealy mouth, we plan to be pure dead good, by the way, big man. I mean, that's basically that is how you end up in the mess of going backwards, because you don't have any plan to go forwards. So by standing still is always going backwards. So you are in effect going backwards because you've got no plan to go forwards, and there's no, this is what we're going to do with the money. And I think it's also, we had Brendan and he went away, and then when he came back, I think what also created part of the issue was there was an expectation, rightfully, that the only reason Brendan had done everything he could do domestically, so there's no reason for Brendan to come back. And this is correct. Brendan himself saw no reason to come back to do anything domestically, that the only reason for coming back was to achieve something in Europe. Brendan had that expectation and obviously had those conversations before he came, that I'm going to be supported to do, you know, domestic's a given, I'm going to be supported to do something in Europe. And the fans then think, well, the only reason he's back is because we are going for it in Europe. And then when the signings of the last three windows don't reflect going for it, that also fuels that anger, because then the expectation's been built up that we're going to move on from domestic and be looking. So again, it's getting back to your point, Matthew. It's not just that the heroin addict needs more dosage. He's been promised more dosage.
Yeah.
And then when he's turned up, he's not got the extra dosage.
I think the 80 million is another thing, I think, that really provoked a lot of the protests this season. I think if we were sitting with, like, fans aren't daft. You know, everyone understands, you're supposed to have savings. You need rainy day money. It doesn't matter whether it's your own domestic housing. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, local council. It doesn't matter what its business is. Every organisation or individual need, ideally, if they can afford it, need some sort of reserves, because you never know what's going to happen, especially in the context of COVID. You know, you don't even have to think that long back to when you might need money. I think what hurts the club, though, is if we had 5 to 10 million in the bank, fans might look and go, right, okay, well, there's no point in saying we should go and spend 50 million because clearly we wouldn't be able to afford to do that. I think fans, though, again, understandably, for the reasons that we're saying, you do look and go, what have we got all this money for? Like, what is the plan? As much as anything else, what is the plan? Do something with the money. I know that there's issues about, you know, in terms of financial fair play, or, you know, whatever UEFA call it now. I know there's issues that it's actually based on your income. It's not just over money in the bank. Otherwise, that would be a way to circumvent certain rules. If you could just dump £1 billion into a bank account and then come back 10 years later and say, right, we're now going to, you know, we're basically going to buy the Champions League. So I know there's issues around that, but there's, what are you going to do with the money? And I even kept thinking, do you know, even simple little things that might have slightly assuaged fans? Like, how many, so we've got roughly 50,000 season ticket holders. So on the face of it, how much would it, well, there's not a question here, we know it there. For roughly, £1 million, you could have given every single supporter a £20 voucher, which almost certainly would lead to higher spending, because most people would go in and go, right, well, what are we going to get for £20? And you could have done something like that that might have, A, made people, and it could have been very much a thanks very much for all your support, especially following the bit after COVID, where we could have said, well, look, thanks very much for sticking by us. Here's just a little, you know, a little thank you. It actually probably would have generated spending for the club, in the sense that people would have spent £100 even though they only had 20. Well, we could do that. And at least then people would see, A, some recognition that the club values them, and B, that something was happening with the money. Whereas we just seem to be saying, yeah, we've got loads of money. No, we've absolutely no idea what we're going to do with it.
It'll only be about 50 million this time next year.
Yeah.
Both the collective and the club. They both, one thing they both achieved together is a reduction in the money in the bank. There. So the club and the collective are a united front in that sense, slashing the cash in the bank.
No vision, but you're right, Matthew. There's no vision, you know, bereft of vision, and I think that's what causes people problems. Because this is, if you had vision, you would know, you would be able to say, this is why we've got this money. I know they say it's for rainy day and there's choppy waters ahead, with only one team qualifying for the Champions League, and it'll be three or four rounds and it'll be very difficult, and you'll see fewer teams. And once you go, as of not the summer coming, but the summer after that, we will have noticed. The only team that can be in the Europa League is the Scottish team dropping down from the qualifiers to the Europa League, because all the other teams will start in the Conference League. We won't start with it. We won't have places in the Conference League. Sorry, the Europa League. We'll only have a team in the Europa League if the team that's trying to qualify for the Champions League doesn't make it. So that's how far down we're going. So the chances are Scottish teams will, not next summer, but the summer after that, they will start being third tier. Across the board, there'll be a third tier of European competition, which is what we are. So it's nothing more than we deserve.
The rest of Scottish football is not even that. Look at Aberdeen in the Conference League.
And are they going to finish bottom, I think? Did they finish bottom?
It's between them and Rapid Vienna. Can't remember which one. When Rapid Vienna got a point in the last minute of a game or something like that. So, yeah, but this is where your point, I mean, personally, I think part of the problem is, if you've worked in an industry for years, decades, and the industry's not dynamic, the industry itself that you work in is not dynamic, so say Scottish football, you can get browbeaten into,
yeah.
What's the
you
point?
You're infected by that.
It's easy for you to say, because you're not doing what I have to do every day. You would, 5 minutes of doing my job, and you wouldn't be saying what you're saying. So it's dead easy to then fall into that world, and then as a consequence, you don't even see there's any possibility out of making a change. And I think that's the challenge of them.
Yeah.
That they've been browbeaten into. It's a culture within the club that this is the best we can do.
Yeah, your parameters are shrinking all the time. Because you're seeing, all you see is obstacles, you don't see opportunities. So those parameters
are the issue. The issue is about employees and leadership. That's what I think it comes down to. If you're an employee of a company, yes, I know that everybody can be a leader, you know, as you're always told, oh yeah, even the lowest employees can be a leader and all this nonsense. But the simple reality is, if you're an employee of a company, you have a different role from a leadership one. I always used to laugh, right? My first job, so I was 16 and I worked in a supermarket and I mainly collected trolleys. And I remember I earned £1.99 an hour for this. One of the things that really used to surprise me was the way that, to some extent, the way that some customers could not differentiate, you know, the various positions within us. So I would come in, for example, I would go out in the battering rain collecting these trolleys with a jacket that you had to share with other people that were also doing the job. And, you know, you're absolutely soaked, you're sweating, you're frankly covered in other people's sweat because they've been wearing the jacket. And you'd have somebody coming in and going, that price of your milk's terrible. And I, in my head, I always thought, yeah, that's right, because as soon as I take this jacket off, I'm going straight to a board meeting where I set national pricing strategy for this supermarket chain. And it was always that nobody expected me, you know, apart from the odd mad person that did, apparently. But as a rule, nobody expected me to be setting strategic direction for the supermarket. You know, I was just an employee. I was there to get told, This is what you have to do. Go away and do it. Now, if you're going to be the manager, or even higher, if you're going to be like a chief executive, then there is more expected of you. You are not expected to just be there and say, well, we'll just do the same tomorrow as we're doing today. Now, that isn't to say that you should bring about change for change's sake. I've worked in different organisations where that was bad, where sometimes people were just like, oh, let's do something differently. Why? Because we want to do it differently. So it's not about just random change, but it is about saying...
Journalism every 6 months?
Yeah, if you are one of the very top people at Celtic, then you do need to give a vision to supporters, but not just the supporters, to potential managers. You know, if you're a manager looking in, you're much more likely. I mean, we've obviously got Nancy now, but you know, it could have been different after Sunday, but we've got Nancy in for now. I hope Nancy stays 3 or 4 years, because the only way he'll stay 3 or 4 years is if he's a success. You know, he's now, his card is very much marked. If we were to somehow lose the next 5 games, I'm still not convinced he would get through January. But, you know, I hope he stays 3 or 4 years. I hope he's a success. I hope we look back and go, thank goodness we persevered. You know, we didn't make a knee-jerk reaction. But one way or another, at some point, you will have to replace Nancy. Now, to me, it is probably significantly easier to attract a good level of employee, whether that's a manager or indeed a player, if they can look at a wider sense that the club has a direction, rather than just, well, they seem happy. As long as they win in Scotland, they seem to be happy enough with that. And clearly that isn't enough. And I think, again, that's where a lot of the things that the collective is quite rightly identified has been the board just not giving any sense of what's coming tomorrow other than what you're having today.
They need a vision for themselves as much as everyone around them, because then that prevents what we're seeing now is kind of mission creep. Because, you know, it's just just drifting. They're just drifting along because they think this is as good as it gets. So therefore, we're not going to try and push because we might be able to get incrementally a little bit better. What might we lose if we're pushing? Because that's what they said, you know. You can push the boat out. I think that's what Ross Desmond said in his statement, didn't he, at the AGM? He said about you can go all in or something like that, but if you swing and miss, I think that was the line, wasn't it, Brian? It was, if you swing and miss, then where does that leave you? But that's their mindset. We know that's their mindset.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the game?
You know, the one area they have, you could say maybe it's misplaced vision, but they've identified this guy, Wilfried Nancy, and said, look, this guy's got potential. This guy can have us playing the Celtic way. This guy could be this modern, forward-thinking coach who can improve players. This is exactly what we need, because we've tried almost the kind of Rodgers, the more established managers. You don't get the same. I mean, Rodgers Mark II just wasn't the same as Rodgers Mark I. He just didn't have that same drive. Where there's this guy, this is his meal ticket. That's what you saw Ange and his drive, because he thought, I need to make this work so I can get to the big five leagues. You know, he was driven by that.
So what did you think of, you know, I know I just joked there, but Matthew, what did you think of the game on Sunday? I don't know if you've seen, I've seen this going around, there's a guy called John Walker who does analysis and stuff like that, and talked about Celtic's crossing comparison. Martin O'Neill, 17 crosses per average 90 minutes under Martin O'Neill. Wilfried Nancy, 33 crosses per average 90 minutes. And then he's talked about maybe they've been working on the accuracy of crosses, because in Hearts, 8% crossing accuracy. St Mirren, 16% crossing accuracy. Dundee United, 21% crossing accuracy. Aberdeen, 23% crossing accuracy. All three Aberdeen goals come from a cross. So his point is, maybe that's what they're working on. I mean, my defence of Nancy, first half, I mean, obviously, part of the challenge is he's the third manager, as I keep getting back to. If the squad wasn't utterly useless in the final third, Brendan Rodgers would still be the Celtic manager. There is patently, evidentially, an issue with the final third of our team. And against Dundee United, we should have been 3-4 up minimum by half time if we didn't have a League of Ireland striker up front. And then against Aberdeen, we should have been 3-4 up at half time if we didn't have that quality of striker up front. And that's part of the issue that he's inherited that squad. So could you see any... And I mean, the criticism would then be against Dundee United. You know, you can see he's got a back three, and then you can see the four, and then see, and then the minute the defence came under pressure against Dundee United, that midfield just collapsed and sat right on top of the back four, and people started playing schoolboy football or chase the football. So, did you see improvement, Matthew, on Sunday against Aberdeen?
Yeah, I mean, I felt Sunday was very, very similar to Wednesday. You know, half time. You know, in Wednesday's game, you were 1-0 up. You didn't know why you were only 1-0 up. You know, you really should have been 2 or 3, you know, ahead. And Sunday was exactly the same. You know, Sunday just felt like, you know, we were 1-0 up, which was great. We were ahead. But you were like, why are we only 1-0 up? You know, we seem unable to hit the target in particular from what really should be, you know, good chances. Obviously then... And you did then have that slight bit in the back of your head, you know, is this just going to be Tannadice again? Even with Aberdeen down to 10 men, which obviously changed the dynamic of the game to a point, but there was this feeling of, this is just going to go wrong. And I think Andrew alluded to it at the start. There was a bit in your head when Aberdeen equalised. I mean, I was waiting. I thought, if Aberdeen score again here, that is it. He's done. And it is just, the footballing gods have conspired to decide this was something that shouldn't have happened. You know, we need to correct this. It's a little bit like, I don't know if you remember the film series Final Destination, you know, where people who should have died don't. So death then finds a way to kill in weird and wonderful ways all the people that didn't die when they actually should have done. And it felt like when Aberdeen equalised on Sunday, it felt, you know, that this was the sort of the footballing world going, no, this was not meant to be. And we are now going to change it. And we're now going to sort of bring back the normality. So I thought we were good. You know, it was similar. The first half at Tannadice, we looked really good going forward. I thought United, generally what I think a lot of Scottish teams do, and St Mirren did it to a point, although St Mirren were more successful because they were 1-0 up. I think teams recognise, let us have the ball, generally. We don't really do much with it. So you can have all your 85% possessions, but if most of that is passing about the back three or whatever, there's really no value. Get to half-time, make sure that within half-time, certainly within the hour mark, make sure that you're within proximity, ideally drawing, even better winning, but even if you're only one behind, because at that point, Celtic will start to get nervous, you're more likely to get, you know, set pieces that are then, as we've shown, consistently an inability to defend set pieces. So I think teams, that was what St Mirren's plan was, it was what United's plan was, and I think to some extent it was Aberdeen's plan as well. And, you know, if Aberdeen had kept the 10 men, sorry, not gone down to 10 men, rather, it might have been a different second half. They might have been that little bit harder to break down. We wouldn't have had as many chances, and maybe they'd have still scored. So you can see what teams try and do to us. And it's similar to what Ange happened. If you remember, the Ange teams, the way the Ange teams used to work were the good games, we absolutely battered teams for an hour, and we were 2, 3, 4 ahead. Mm-hmm. And then we tired for the last half hour, but it didn't matter because the other team were demoralised and they were never going to come back from the big leads we have. The games we struggled under Ange were where we'd got to the hour mark and it was 1-0 or it was 0-0 and we had absolutely battered ourselves senseless, and now we had to do the last half hour with a team that was like, haha, now we've got them where we want them. You know, I think games we struggled against Rangers, or the games against Rangers under Ange are a good example. Some of the games, absolutely brilliant. The big famous one, you know, the February one where we were playing, you know, the whole midweek game and we just battered them. And even though they came back into it in the latter stage, it didn't matter because the game was done. Whereas the games we struggled against Rangers, we didn't use that. And I thought it felt similar with, you know, with Nancy. We need to take the chances. And as you say, as long as we've got, no harm to Kenny, but, you know, as long as we've got a League of Ireland striker, that's what we've got. If we currently had a striker, I mean, I always think you've got to slightly watch this because people say if we had a poacher, for example, yeah. If your poacher is valid, but then it changes the dynamic of the team because, you know, the poacher isn't in addition to the players that were on the park. You know, you have to take someone who was doing running out to have that poacher that doesn't do anything except score. I mean, actually, do you know who I think would actually work very well in this team? Just because his finishing was very, very good generally, was Lee Griffiths. Griffiths had quite a lot of mobility, but could actually, generally was pretty reliable if he was given a chance. And I think if you had somebody like that, I don't even mean, obviously Henrik Larsson would have a great time, but even a more realistic, affordable equivalent, if we had the equivalent of a Lee Griffiths in this team at his height, It would have been 4-0 the last few games, and we would never have been talking about Nancy.
I thought you were going to say Scott McDonald, even somebody like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was something I saw online where Johnny Kenny's miss on Sunday against Aberdeen was almost identical to his miss against Dundee United at Tannadice, where it is ball cut across, he is 6 yards out in front of goal, and basically, if the ball just hit him, it would go towards the goal, and he manages to avoid making contact with the ball whatsoever, or making any appreciable contact that would put it in. So, yeah.
And it was weird because one occasion he let the ball go across his body, but another one he didn't. I'm sure the way that he messed up was the opposite ways from the other one he messed up, even though it was the same chance. If you know what I mean? Is he left footed?
Well, I couldn't tell.
Because both of them have come from the left, and I don't think he set himself up well for his right. And it's like, the reason why you might not set yourself well for your right foot is because you're thinking you're a left footer, you know, and you're more left, you're left-minded. So if it's coming across for there, that's not as good. Well, if it was coming from his left and he's left-footed, that's not where you necessarily want it, more than, like, if it was coming from the right and you're left-footed, that's more a straightforward thing. Will I look up if he's left-footed?
But you're right, Matthew. I mean, I keep going on about people having this... And it's always the way, you know, it's like when Bobo Baldi wasn't in the team, he was Franz Beckenbauer and stuff like that. You know, people always have this rose-tinted view of the past. And you'll then throw in games under Ange where we drew 0-0 with Livingston. Giakoumakis misses a last-minute penalty. Actually, you felt it was a last-minute penalty, but we still managed to miss another chance 30 seconds later. Or there was the one, again, against Livingston, where Abada scores at the very last second where the cross comes in at the far post and puts it in. There was a number of games under Ange where we struggled and got a goal. But equally, I also remember people complaining that there was also lots of games where the team just completely ran out of steam in the last 15, 20 minutes under Ange and did absolutely nothing. You know, we battered Real Madrid at Celtic Park for 60 minutes and lost 3-0. You know, so people can have rose-tinted spectacles of thinking about everything to do with a former manager, and nobody's got a perfect system that wins everything. For me, the intrinsic issue here is, as I keep getting back to, we've got a squad that the reason we're on our third manager is because the squad's not up to scratch.
But, by the way, you mentioned Ange, but, and I would say that's the closest I've seen Celtic playing to an Ange ball style. I think Sunday was closer than, even during the whole of the second to Rodgers, and he played some great stuff, but it was a different style of football. But that was, that level of intensity, that level of kind of siege that they actually inflicted on Aberdeen, I haven't really seen that. It was just relentlessness. And their short passing was really sharp. I know he's not your favourite, but I saw something different from Negrin on Sunday. I genuinely thought I saw a guy that's improving, that understands it more. He looks as if he realises he has to be more physical. Sometimes that does take 6 months or whatever in Scotland. And he's quite a good frame. He should be able to be more one of the more physical Celtic players. He's quite robust looking. Quite tall as well, isn't he? He's over 6 foot. There's not that many 6-footers. He's roughly about 6 foot. Because that's still Celtic's problem, is the physicality. They don't have enough physicality.
Although we started the game with one centre-half in the start lineup.
But I think Ralston's more physical, or he's probably as physical as Scales, whether it's a kind of adroit physicality.
I see Scales has reverted to the mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to. I mean,
I was getting really annoyed on Sunday because people were allowing Scales to make passes of more than 6 feet. And I was getting really annoyed with that because any pass he made against Dundee United when he came on, in fact, basically in the last wee while, any pass he's made of more than 6 feet where he's had more than 1.5 seconds to think about it, he'd be just as well just hoofing it. He'd be just as well doing the Roy Aitken hoof it out of the park.
Yeah. No, I think
There was an altercation in the old stand between two old biddies, talking about scales and his passing or otherwise ability. Got really heated. And the guy said, he just can't even pass. Can he make a six-yard pass?
No, he's
been our best defender. He's been our best defender all season. You're getting that. He said, still can't he pass, mate?
I think the problem is, he hasn't just been your best defender. Up to now, you can make a case for him being player of the year, as in he has been very reliable and within his abilities. And I think it's a bit like the reverse of the drug thing earlier. There's an expectational issue. No harm to Scales. I've no problem with William Scales being part of the squad. Like I say, to a large extent, he's done a lot of good things this season. But if we are serious about making progress in Europe, William Scales is not, the answer. And that's no harm to him. As I say, he's a perfectly good member of the squad. But if we are seriously saying this guy's this guy's the first name in the team sheet, which I think to a large extent for a lot of the season he has been, that's more an indictment of the squad rather than this endorsement that Scales is a great player. And as I say, I do genuinely think he's had a good season by his relative standards. But if we've told ourselves now that this is the level to which we aspire, then, we really are. I mean, you can look forward to Hearts celebrating five in a row or something, unless Rangers get their act together. There comes a point where, we do have to be better than that. Yeah. And on that note, Brian, thinking of the time, are we doing the Christmas question?
Yeah, so I was just about to say, conscious of the time, we need to be getting going. So I did ask, to finish that off, we won. Anyway, I did ask the guys.
Won well.
Well, you did win well. Actually, as soon as we got the second, I had no qualms. There wasn't a possibility that Aberdeen were coming back. And once we got the second.
No,
so
again.
I asked the guys to think about this before we came on. It's a couple of days before Christmas. So if Santa's going to give you and or Celtic, you as a Celtic fan, or just give it straight to Celtic, one present for Christmas. Andrew, what is your Celtic Santa present that you would want Santa to give? Because he's loading up this now.
Well, I want a world of peace and goodwill. And the only way we get a Celtic world of peace and goodwill is new ownership. I want a new high roller of a Celtic owner who makes Mother Teresa look like Keith Richards. That's who I want. That's what I want.
Right, okay. So you're shooting quite high. I wasn't quite looking for that. Could you not have gone a bit easier and maybe solved the Israel-Palestine problem?
It's Santa.
Matthew, what's yours?
I'm going to be greedy and have two, but I'll cheat that by I'll give one of them to Wilfred Nancy, and I'll give one of them to the fans or the boards, you can say. For Nancy, I think it's based on what we've been talking about. I'd like to see a striker. I think that if we had an out-and-out striker, somebody that we knew we could rely on, then currently, based on the last two or three games anyway, there's a lot of evidence that we could have had a much easier life and so on. So somebody that's an actual forward, an actual centre-forward that can be relied on, that's what I would like for Nancy. Maybe that's what I'd like for myself. The second thing, and I suppose it's both the board if they want to keep their jobs, although increasingly I think that becomes quite difficult for many of them. But it's some sort of vision for the next 10 years. It's some semblance that we have a plan. And I don't mean, I know that the Ross Desmond bit about, you have to watch, you don't spend all the money and it goes wrong. I'm not advocating that next season we should spend 100 million on players and go mad. I'm advocating that in the next 10 years we have some idea that from an infrastructure basis, from a perhaps, within the context of the youth teams and so on, that we have some idea that over the next 10 years, we have a genuine investment plan. We are going to do something with some of this money, use it in a productive way that actually gives us an idea that the club is going forward, rather than just saying, well, as long as we just have mainly the status quo, everything will be fine. So I don't know which of those is easier to get, a striker that can score goals or a strategic direction from the Celtic board, but I'd like at least one of them and preferably both.
I think you're more likely to get the striker. That's my idea. I've been speaking to one of Santa's helpers, and he tells me you're more likely to get your striker. There you go.
Ilyich, the guy that scored 2 goals in 14 games or something, isn't it? That Ollie Burke's keeping him out of the Union Berlin team.
Anyway, with that, I will say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and thanks very much.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, guys.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.